I promise you this will be the most important part because this is the part that sets the direction for the future. We call this the magic of self-direction. The magic of self-direction. I love this part. It changed my life. When I was a young man and poor and broke and uneducated, unskilled, unemployed, and had nothing but problems, I stumbled upon the magic of self-direction. And my life was never the same again. And what I found is the biggest mistake you can ever make is to think that you already have it or that you already know it. People think, well, I know all about goals. Really? Do you have very clear, written, specific goals and plans to accomplish them that you work on and prioritize every minute of every day? Well, no, but I've heard about goals. Biggest mistake we can make is to think that we know something that is essential for our success when we don't know it at all. Remember, you only know it to the extent to which you do it. You don't know it to the extent to which you can talk about it or wish about it or hope. It's only what you do that counts. Okay, number one, we say change is the most important factor facing your life today, impacting your life. Change is something we've never seen before. The average person today makes more life-affecting decisions in a year than their grandparents made in a lifetime. As we said at the beginning yesterday, every day, every week, every month, the answers have changed. The answers are changing at a more and more rapid rate. And this is something that you can either roll with, you can be a master of change, or you can be a victim of change. And your goal, your decision must be to be a master of change. And the way you become a master of change is you become a master at self-direction. A, the three factors affecting change are, first of all, knowledge. Knowledge is doubling every 2 to 3 years. Every 2 to 3 years. Now, what does that mean? Well, here's a very simple analysis. One study said that since 500 BC, say 500 BC, 2,500 years before Christ, the amount of information available to you and I has increased by approximately 10 million times. And in the next 100 years, the amount of information available to you will increase another 10 million times. When we say that information is doubling every 2 to 3 years, we mean the total amount of information available. Books, tapes, articles, research on universities, campuses, think tanks, institutes, seminars, and so on. So imagine you took all the knowledge that had been gathered in all the history of the human race and you put it all in a pile. It would probably be a huge, huge pile, who knows, 50 stories high, covering the whole downtown area of a major city. Right next to that pile, 2 to 3 years from now, will be another pile equally the same size. And by the first decade of next year, there will be another pile equal to all the previous piles every year. Can you imagine that? Nobody can imagine that. Nobody can even comprehend it. And 70% of adult Americans have not been in a bookstore in 5 years. We are entering into the information age, and we are going into it at the speed of hyperspace, a la Star Wars, and the average person doesn't read it all. They read a little newspaper, read a little trash, read a little garbage, watch a little nonsense on television, go to bed, and they think that they're players in the information age. They're so far behind, they think they're first. You know. What it means is that your knowledge must continue to grow as well. And since it cannot grow in all areas, it just has to grow continually in the areas of your life that are most important. You cannot learn all things, but you can learn some key things and continue learning and getting better in the areas that affect your life. B, technology is another major factor. And we've never seen such technological expansion as we've seen today. Technology is expanding almost like a fusion reaction in all directions. And every piece of technology seems to lead to new technology. You know, they used to say, if you don't like the weather, hang around, it'll be different in a few hours. Or they say, if you don't like the price, wait around, inflation will increase it. Today we're saying, if you can't do something, just wait around, technology will come up with a way very fast. Andrew Grove, over here at Intel, came up with a law of technology, which I thought was interesting. He said, anything that can be done with technology will be done with technology, and far faster than you can imagine. There is a law of change today that says changes take place at a more rapid rate in your life than we ever conceived of. So if you set a 5-year plan for yourself, you'll probably achieve it in a compacted form in 2 years. Everybody I know who sets long-term goals finds those goals happening much more rapidly. You make a decision, you embark on a course of action, and things happen at an accelerated rate. And anything that can be done with technology will be done. So therefore, if you are not technologically fluent, that means if you cannot use a computer, if you are not hooked up with a modem to the online services so that you can surf and get the information you require, this is necessary that you do that. And it's not whether or not you will, it's only how and when. And so make a decision. As we said, you don't have to do it overnight. Say, over the next year, I'm going to learn how to use a computer. I'm going to purchase one, take it home. I'm going to learn how to use the World Wide Web so I can access information. I'm going to learn how to use a computer so I can be more productive, get more done, contact, communicate with people, use email. Today, and Andrew Grove said this, he said the biggest single change that has taken place in 10 years is today, instead of sending out letters, you can send out emails to everybody in the world in 2 seconds. You can have a list of everybody you want on your list and you can send them a message in 2 seconds by email. It's absolutely phenomenal. We don't even know how it works. You push a button and it disappears into the ether and shows up on the other side of the world in seconds. Speed of light, 186,000 miles a second. It's unbelievable. But we don't need to know how it works. But we do need to know how to make it work for us. I went to say goodbye to my little girl before I came up here. I went in and she was busy. She was on her computer. And she said, "Goodbye, Dad. Have a good time." She's back to her computer. She's 5 years old. She's busy playing games and writing reports, and she's got a printer out there. She's printing this stuff out. She's working a computer. She's 5 years old. My son Michael, 14-year-old, is down the hall. His bedroom looks like the cockpit of a 747. I mean, he controls spacecraft from that room, I'm convinced. He can surf all the major worldwide webs. He's got computers, printers, scanners. I mean, he can take a photograph. Can you send this photograph to someone? He can take it, boom, scan, poot, chip, boom, and send it to someone in Montreal in about 5 seconds. How about this? We get an encyclopedia, and we say, here's an encyclopedia on a CD-ROM. Now you can get 44 volumes, 60 million words you can get on a CD-ROM. Bang, pull it up, there's a photograph. He can take that photograph, ching, ching, boom, 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 print, boom, and you've got a color photograph out of an encyclopedia in a matter of a few seconds. Unbelievable what can be done. Unbelievable what can be done. And there are a lot of people in this room, by the way, who still don't know how to use a computer. And we know who you are. So, just walk down to your local computer store. That's what they're there. Say, look, I don't know very much about computers, but I'm thinking about becoming computer literate. Can you give me some direction? All computers today are icon-driven. That means that you don't even need to be a genius at anything. You just need to be able to press the icon on the button. Just take a little mouse, go bip, bip, and it works. You have to be able to type. You can learn to type with a computer program that goes right on your computer. It'll teach you to type, and that'll give you access to the world. To the world. So it's very important that you learn about technology and that you keep current. Don't fall behind. Don't sound like an idiot when people start talking about computers. Sound like, you know, a dumb person, but not an idiot. Okay. C is competition. And competition is a major factor that is driving our world. And the competition is not just local. The competition is not just national, but it's international, multinational, global, and it's coming from all directions. Mostly today, it's coming from the Far East. And I can tell you this. I was out in Asia recently with a friend of mine and with the Taiwanese. And if you want to see some of the most highly motivated, smartest, sharpest, most vigorous competitors in the world, you go out and look at the Chinese, both in China and the overseas Chinese, and whoa, these people make you nervous. I said to my friend, I've seen the future, and we're not in it. They're willing to work 10, 12, 14 hours a day, 6 days a week. They are willing to work hard, 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 start early, work hard, stay later, take courses. They are aggressive. They want our standard of living, and they are willing to pay for it. Tom Peters was out in Asia recently, and he said, what is it the Asians remind us of more than anything else? The way we were before we brought in our welfare society. The way Americans were, self-reliant, strong, independent, hardworking, aggressive, honest, concentrating on self-development and personal learning. Exactly what made America great are the qualities that are making the Asian nations great today. And so what we need to do is get back to basics. We need to work a little harder, stay a little later. We need to be a little bit more focused because the competition is coming for our lunch and we're going to have to be able to outcompete them. Have you seen a spin wheel in fireworks? You know, in fireworks, it has a spin wheel. It has three little things. Well, I believe that this is the spin wheel of life today. It's like a triangle, spin wheel. Here you have the central axle of change. And then here you have the three. You have knowledge expanding and shooting. And here you have technology expanding. And here you have competition expanding. And what they're doing is they're going faster and faster and faster. And each one is multiplying times the other and going faster and faster and faster. Here's a good rhetorical question for you. Is the rate of change going to be greater next year or slower? How about 5 years from now? If change is multiplying times itself and is going exponentially, I can tell you this, 10 years from now, your kids are going to ask you if you lived back in 1997 when nothing was happening. Because compared to where they will be in 10 years, 1997 will look like an era of hammocks and mint juleps, where we basically sat around and things only changed at about 150 miles an hour. There, they'll be changing 1,000 miles an hour. Your kids are going to be doing things that you cannot believe. Five-year-olds will be able to operate computers and internets in ways that we cannot even imagine today. Jack Welch said this recently, and I really like the quote. He said, if the rate of change outside your organization is greater than the rate of change inside your organization, then the end is in sight. If the rate of change outside your life and whatever you're doing is greater than the rate of change inside of you, then the end is in sight for us as well. It's only a matter of time. We are living on borrowed time unless we are keeping current with the speed of change. Does this make sense? It's obvious. And throughout history, there have always been the change masters and the change victims. There have been people who said change is, it's inevitable, it's uncontrollable, it just is, it's like weather. So therefore, let's roll with the change, let's work with it. As Peter says, embrace the change, accept the change, accept the change as norm and stability as abnormal. And once you have that attitude, then you're okay. And the key to accepting change is to be willing to change. The number one quality that will be necessary for success for the rest of your life is the quality of flexibility. Flexibility means the willingness to chop and change, to bend like a willow in the wind rather than a pine tree that snaps off, to be willing to abandon your old ideas and embrace new ideas, to accept that no matter how long it's taken you to come up with a conclusion, the answers are changing. A recent study said that more than 90% of everything you know about your job or your field today will be obsolete in 5 years. It'll be irrelevant, have nothing to do with your work. It'll have to all be replaced with new information, ideas, and understandings about your work. All your customers will be different, your products will be different, your services will be different, your prices will be different, your competitors will be different, your markets will be different. Everything will be different in 5 years. So if you're not constantly gobbling up new information and technology and becoming more and more competitive, you're actually falling behind. As Pat Riley said, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse, but nobody is staying in the same place. So what we know is that change is the major cause of anxiety and stress. It's the major cause of anxiety and stress today. But what do we know about stress? Stress is not contained in events themselves, is it? It's our reactions to events that occur. It's the way we respond to what's happening that causes us to feel stressful or not. If you get stuck in traffic, you can get all angry and upset and pound on the horn and swear at nearby drivers. Or you can listen to an audio tape or give some thought to your next appointment or reflect on what you're going to do for the rest of your days or think about your goals. In other words, how you choose to respond to the situation determines whether or not you experience stress. Today, most people respond to change as though it was personally aimed at them, as though they were victims. The great tragedy today is called victimology. Everybody has a tendency to think that they are victims. We're victims. We get caught in traffic. Damn, who did it? Nobody did it. It just happened. A, change makes you feel out of control. Change makes you feel out of control. And feeling out of control is the major reason for stress. We feel out of control. Have you ever had an experience where you're driving down the road and your car hits a wet patch or a slippery patch and your car goes shoo? Like, have you ever had that? And notice what happens to your blood, your heart rate, and you're done, you go, and you get back again. Because of what happened is you're out of control for just a few seconds. Or you're walking along and you slip on something. And you slip and you lose your balance and you're off balance and everything else. You catch your balance and your whole body is in emergency conditions. What happens if you have this going on all the time? So, boom, boom, boom. I mean, it's happening all the time. You get into a state of anxiety and stress. You get into having a Prozac day. So, B, it causes uncertainty and unpredictability. Human beings are not good with uncertainty. We're not good. We react to it poorly. We respond ineffectively. We get angry and lash out. And change, rapid change, is a major source of frustration and underachievement. Why underachievement? Well, because we continue doing things the same way, even though all the evidence tells us that it doesn't work anymore. It's not working. In fact, there's a lot of work that we've done on paradigms that say that paradigms work for a certain period of time, and then it takes more and more effort to get the same result. Sometimes you find yourself pounding your head against the wall because it feels good when you stop. Amazing the number of people are trying to make something work, and they're having to work harder and harder to get the same amount of results instead of recognizing that the answers have changed. The answers have changed. So therefore, it causes uncertainty, it causes frustration, it causes underachievement. Remember, the chances are very likely that if a change is necessary, which it is, you're already a year too late. You're already a year behind schedule. Almost every major change in your life that you make, whether it's work, relationships, or anything else, in retrospect, you realize you should have made it a long time ago. You should have made it a long time ago. Isn't that true? So therefore, the change is never too early. The change is almost invariably far past the due date. Okay, number three, goals enable you to control the direction of change. And this is the most wonderful thing of all. Goals enable you to control the direction of change. This is the greatest of all benefits because it assures that change is self-directed rather than random. Self-directed change is a source of energy, enthusiasm, and personal power. Undirected or other-directed change is a source of stress and confusion and uncertainty. What do we know? We know that life never goes on the same for any period of time. Life is either getting better or it's getting worse, but it's never going on the same. Nothing continues the same. So what goals do, is goals enable you to assure that change is predominantly positive, because self-directed change is always in the direction of where you want to go. Undirected change is always random and haphazard. We need goals in order to control the direction of our lives until we get to altitude. Once you get to altitude, you have a lot more flexibility. But on the way up, you've got to have absolute clarity. What's the number one reason why people fail in life? Fuzzy goals. And because of fuzzy goals, they waste their time. They go to the left, and they go to the right, and they go to the north, and they go to the south, and they try a little bit of this, and they try a little bit of that. And at the end of the day, they're back home exhausted, and they've accomplished nothing. But with goals, you don't waste your time. How can you tell if what you're doing is right or wrong? Exactly. It's either moving you towards your goals or it's moving you away. And nothing is neutral because everything counts. So therefore, successful people are crystal clear about what they want to do and where they want to go with their lives. And then they make sure that everything they do is consistent with where they want to go and what they want to do. That's all. Unsuccessful people have no idea, and therefore they have no way to judge whether or not their actions are effective or ineffective, high value or low value. So they waste years of life spinning their wheels because they're not clear about where they want to end up. Imagine if you went out with somebody and said, let's go out for dinner. Okay, run out, get in the car. Where will we go? I don't know. Where do you want to go? I don't know. Well, let's just go. Okay, drive down the street. Should we turn left? Should we turn right? Let's go straight ahead. What do you want to do? What do you want to eat? I don't know. Chinese, Italian, pizza, who knows? Let's go left. Let's go right. You want to go there? I don't know. Do you want to go there? Let's go here. Da, da, da. That's how most people live their lives. And you drive around all night. Nobody got anything to eat. You finally, and so on. Except the intelligent people say, what would we like to eat and where? Of the places that we could go to, what would be the best choice? Let's phone and make a reservation. Then let's drive straight there and then have a pleasant evening and come back. And the other people went back and forth and back and forth like a cartoon. And they say, boy, you sure were lucky. You had a nice time last night. We just drove around everywhere and ended up hungry. Ate at McDonald's on the way back. And here's the most wonderful thing of all. I'll write it in red. Goals give you a tremendous sense of control. And the key to a positive mental attitude is a sense of control. It's feeling that you are in control of your own life. A sense of control is the essence of personal power. You feel strong. You feel like you can do anything when you're clear about who you are and where you're going. Now, there are three key elements in goal setting. And these elements come back over and over again. Number four. We say A, the Acres of Diamonds philosophy. Now, the Acres of Diamonds philosophy is based on a famous story by a man named Russell Conwell. Russell Conwell was asked to give a talk to help fund Temple University back at the turn of the century. He sat down and in one superconscious rush wrote this talk. He went out and gave it. It got a standing ovation. He gave it more than 5,000 times in the course of his lifetime and funded the university. And basically what it said is that your great opportunities and possibilities lie under your own feet. And he was talking, in the talk it says, you don't have to leave Philadelphia to go to Los Angeles or San Jose or St. Louis to find your opportunities. In most cases, all your great opportunities are right where you are. Most self-made millionaires live in the same town they were born in or have lived and worked in that town for more than 25 years. They didn't rush all over the country and try 1,000 different things. They tried one thing in one place, and they did it extremely well, and they held on to the money. So, your Acres of Diamonds says, when you want to achieve great things in life, just look where you are. Look under your own feet. Look into your own talents and abilities today. Look at your education and experience. Look at your contacts and the friends you have. Look at your industry and say what the possibilities are. Look at the things that you've run into as you've been moving around. Your Acres of Diamonds are very near at hand. 80-90% of all your success will come right under your own feet. Here's the challenge. A diamond does not look like a diamond in its rough form. A diamond in its rough form looks like a rough piece of rock. It needs to be cut and shaped and polished and cut and shaped and polished until you get a diamond. Opportunities come dressed in work clothes. And people say, well, I'm waiting for my opportunity, and it comes along, but it's dressed in work clothes. It's an opportunity to learn and work hard for a long period of time and build a business or build a career. Say, no, I'm waiting for my opportunity. I'm waiting for the quick fix. I'm waiting for the fast buck. I'm waiting for the easy way to make a big hit. But opportunities come dressed in work clothes. What's the quality of self-made millionaires in America? Is they're all hard, hard workers. What's the quality of unsuccessful people? Is they're fundamentally lazy. So, Acres of Diamonds. Look for your Acres of Diamonds, and they're probably under your own feet. Now, the second element of goal setting is the area of excellence. Remember I said before that everybody has the capacity to be excellent at something. Everybody has the capacity to be excellent at something, and one of the great aims and purposes and responsibilities of adult life is for you to find yours. Imagine that this is a scale of normal skills. This is the normal scale or average. Your skills range around this. You're better at reading and poor at math and better at golf and poor at tennis and so on. Most people have skills that range. Some people are very poor. But everybody also has skill areas where they are off the clock. If this is the normal range of average, each person has areas where they are off the clock in potential abilities. But an ability is a latent ability until it's developed. You could be extraordinarily good, and you'll notice because you'll have a natural sort of tendency toward it. You'll like it, you'll admire it, you'll respect it, you'll think about it, and so on. You'll have the innate ability, but that doesn't mean you could just do it. It means now you have to go to work and start polishing. But each person has areas where you are potentially extraordinary. And if you can identify those areas and put your whole heart into becoming excellent in those areas, you can have everything you want in life. And if you don't, you can't. And that's all there is to it. There are no people who are successful who stay in the average range. No average performers who ever accomplished anything of merit. Isn't that true? So therefore, we call this the top 10% range. You have the ability to be in the top 10% in more than one area. And it could be several areas. You know, there's something like 110,000 different job categories in the United States today. There are hundreds of those jobs, any one of which you could be outstanding in, world class, and achieve all your goals and dreams in life. Your job is to find it. Your job is to go on a hunt, a detective hunt, and find it. And as we go through today, it'll come clearer and clearer to you. Because before we're finished, we will have covered all of this. Okay, number C, and C is the major definite purpose. The major definite purpose is probably the most important part of Napoleon Hill's work, is the discovery that every person's life begins to become great when they settle upon a major definite purpose, and they become absolutely crystal clear, and they focus and concentrate single-mindedly on that purpose and only that purpose until they achieve it. I was giving a talk some years ago, and a professor of biochemistry, one of the most prestigious in the community and a leading instructor at the local university, was there. And he came to me afterwards and he said, it's very interesting about that major definite purpose, because when I was in university and I got into biochemistry, my goal was to win a Nobel Prize in biochemistry. And I knew, I absolutely knew I was going to make a major contribution to this field. I felt it. He said, I worked 18 years long hours, 10, 12 hours a day, sometimes 6, 7 days a week. He said in his 16th year, he, along with another researcher, came up with a breakthrough in DNA and won the Nobel Prize. He said it was a wonderful prize because it was worth about $500,000 at that time, his share. He said, but I always knew I would. He said it was my purpose all my life was to make such a major contribution in biochemistry that I would win a Nobel Prize. He said the money didn't even matter that much. He said I gave it to my university. He said, but it was my organizing purpose throughout my life. If your major definite purpose, by the way, is to become financially independent, there's nothing that can stop you from becoming financially independent except yourself by doing things that are inconsistent with your purpose. That's all. If you do things that are consistent with your purpose, nothing can stop you. If you do things that are inconsistent with your purpose, nothing can help you. So, number 5, your major definite purpose must be. Here are the definitions of a major definite purpose. And somebody's going to come up to me at the break, and so I'm going to short circuit that right now, because if you do come up, I'm going to tweak your nose. And they're going to say, excuse me, can you have more than one definite purpose? That's saying, can you drive more than one car at a time? Can you ride more than one bicycle? Can you ride more than one horse? I mean, the fact of the matter is no. The answer is no. And don't come up to me and say, what about this? What about no? You can only have one. The inability to have one means you have none. More than one major definite purpose is no definite purposes. You can have sub-goals in other areas, but you must have one. So here are the keys. A, it must be clear. It must be specific. It must be objective. B, it must be measurable. Now, you can have a major definite purpose for spiritual development, to be a fine person, to be more kind, more patient, more compassionate, to be a better human being. But these are not major definite purposes. These are goals, the personal development goals. A major definite purpose has to be tangible, has to be something you can get your hands around and then you can measure. For instance, a friend of mine decided he wasn't in very good shape. He was 42 years old. He went through this course. He'd always, you know, said, someday I'm going to get fit, like you have been saying for years. Someday I'm going to get fit. Not this year, but someday I'll get fit. And he decided, by gum, I'm going to get fit. He said, now how would I measure fitness? He said, if I could run a marathon, I'd be one of the fittest people in the world. Okay, I'm going to run a marathon. He went out and he bought the books and he bought the shoes. And he got some counseling and he got some training and he began to walk. And then he began to jog, then he began to run. 6 months after he began, he ran 26.4 miles in a marathon. He's one of the fittest people in the world. And he had a plan for every single day and he disciplined himself to stay on that plan. He was also in sales. And you know how much he makes now per year? Well over $1 million net gross to himself in commissions per year. He found that the same disciplines that he was able to apply to himself in running a marathon, he was able to apply to his business, and he became one of the most successful people in his field in the world. And he started off in a small town, knowing nobody, with nothing, working out of a telephone book. What's your excuse? C, your goal must be achievable, but requires stretch. You want a goal that requires stretch. You've got to set it beyond anything that you've done before. This is an important point, by the way. If you set it too far beyond what you've done before, it'll actually be a demotivator. If a person says, well, I want to run a marathon by the week after next. Well, you'll get out, you take one turn around the block, you'll string your hamstring, you'll feel terrible, you go home, and you say, that's it, you won't run again. But if you say, I want to run a marathon in a year, then you say, okay, then what do I have to do one day at a time for the next 365 days? You will run a marathon. There are 65-year-old grandmothers who are running marathons who have never run in their lives before they were 63 or 64 and decided, by gum, if someone else can do it. Now, they are not setting world records, but they're running them. And everybody else says, well, you're crazy, Granny. Yes, I'm crazy, but I'm going to live forever. How about you? And D, your goals must be in harmony. Your goals must be in harmony with other things. You cannot have goals that are contradictory. I have people come to me and say, I want to be a top success in selling, but I want to be a successful professional golfer. Really? And how are you going to mix the two? Well, I want to play golf every afternoon to increase my skills, but I want to be exceptional in selling too. I want to make a lot of money in selling. I say, well, you know what will happen? Like riding two bicycles. You'll end up on the street on neither one of them. And that's what will happen. You'll neither be successful in selling, nor will you be successful in professional golf. You cannot have goals that are contradictory. Your goals have to be in harmony. Now, that being said, let us now begin our work. Please get ready. And here is our first test, number 6. I want you to write down and begin with your values. Write down your 5 most important values in life. Your 5 most important values, virtues in life. What are the most important things to you? Love, integrity, family, health, success, persistence, courage, creativity, music, spiritual development, God. What are the 5 most important things in the world to you? Write them down. You have 60 seconds. Write quickly. There are no wrong answers. This is very important. Your values really are the core of who you are. Seconds. Now let me explain the importance of this question. All exceptional people know who they are. Who you are is your values. Who you are is your values organized by priority. Successful people are clear about what they believe in and stand for, and they don't compromise those values. There's no question. The interesting thing is, when you know who you are and what you stand for, it's quite easy to make decisions in your life, because either they are in or they're out. It's very simple. Unsuccessful people, as I said yesterday, are fuzzy. They're unclear. They're unsure. They will compromise their values. If an advantage or a possibility comes up, compromise it in favor of some advantage or possibility. But for you, it's not acceptable. Your job is to be crystal clear about what you stand for, and crystal clear in the order of your values. We said that you are what you do. How can you tell what a person really is, who a person's values really are? Your values are always expressed in your actions, and especially your actions under pressure. Whenever you're under pressure, you tell people who you really are, and you tell yourself for that matter. You say you're a really nice, kind, compassionate, patient person, and then you're put under pressure and you fall apart and scream and shout and blame other people. That's who you really are. The way that we test a car is what? We put it on a test track and we put the pedal to the metal and we race it full out. And it's when the car is raced full out that we find out what the car is really made of. It's when you are working full out under pressure that you demonstrate to others what you're really made of. Exceptional people don't disintegrate and fly apart under pressure. They become even more so. They become more crystal clear with regard to their values. So what are your values? Sit down with your spouse and work out what your values are. Do you know what love is? Love is a response to values. We love another person because we love the values that they espouse, that they represent. If you were to call my wife, Barbara, and you were to say, "Why did Brian marry you?" She would tell you in an instant. If you were to call one of my children and say, "Why did your father marry your mother?" They would tell you in an instant, because they all know. And the answer is because of her character. I married her because of her character. Everything else will come and go, but I married her because of her character. Best damn decision I ever made. And that's the decision that we make with other people. We get involved with other people because of their character, because of who they really, really are, and especially who they are under pressure. Because everything else will come and go, but that's the most important of all. So, what are your values? What are the values of your spouse? What are the values that you are inculcating into your children? The core value, by the way, the foundation value is truthfulness, integrity. If you can get your children so that they are thoroughly honest young people, then the other values will stack on top of that. Warmth, love, compassion, generosity, courage, persistence, and so on. All those others will flow naturally from inner integrity. So what are your values? Now, number 7 is the quick list method. List your 3 most important goals in life right now. This is the quick list method. List your 3 most important goals in life right now. 1, 2, 3. You have 30 seconds. Write fast. Go, 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 go. If you can't think of anything, write money, money, money. 20 seconds left. Go, go, go. 10 seconds. Ready, set, stop. Now, you will not necessarily find these questions easy, but they will illustrate to some of us that we're not as clear about who we are and what we want as we thought. We thought we were until our feet are put to the fire and we have only a few seconds to write it down, and suddenly we go blank. Anybody go blank? You go blank. It's quite normal, quite natural. This quick list method is very powerful. You can use it everywhere and you can use it with everyone. If you have people working for you, it's a very simple exercise. Just have everybody sit down, go home at night, say, honey, what are your three most important goals in life right now? And compare honey's with yours. And you'll find any conflicts that exist in your relationship will be right there. Because when you are asked your three most important goals in life, in 30 seconds, it's got to be fast, your subconscious mind goes loom and just pop, 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 and pops your three most important goals up. People say, well, my goals are love and the world and people and things like that. And they only got 30 seconds and they write money, money, money. And they've been deluding themselves. They thought, gee, I thought all my goals were noble and altruistic and everything else, but when I only had 30 seconds, all I could think of is my financial problems. And you know what? You've been deluding yourself. You've been pretending to go one way, but in reality, this has been your major area of concern. You can ask anybody these goals. What are your three major goals in life right now, 30 seconds? And whenever you have a chance and you're going through life, stop and say, what are my three most important goals in life right now? Bang, bang, bang. And you'll be amazed at how helpful this is because it gives you a fix on your position in the universe. It tells you what is really relevant to you at this particular moment. It also tells you what your major problems and concerns are in life right now as well, because your goals are almost always the solutions to your three major concerns in life right now. So if you're having problems with money, write money. If you're having problems with health, you'll write health. If you're having problems with relationships, you write relationships. Those will be your three goals. It's good that you know. Remember, clarity, clarity, clarity. The more clear you are about who you are and what you want, the easier it is for you to get it. Number 8 is, what would you do? How would you change your life if you won $1 million cash today? Imagine you won $1 million cash, but in order to pick up the prize, you had to answer that question. What would you do with $1 million? You have to explain. And don't say, well, I put it all in bonds and live off the interest. How would you change your life? Not how you would spend the money. How would you change your life if you had $1 million cash, tax-free, after-tax money, right now? What would you do differently? Quickly, write down everything you can think of doing. If you don't write down 5 things, in 1 minute, you don't get the money. Seconds. Quit your job, run for public office, start a business, pay off your credit cards. Seconds. What would you do? How would you change your life if you had $1 million in the bank today? You're already a millionaire. 15 seconds, go. 8. Okay, please stop. Now, this is an interesting question, because this question basically says, what would you do if you had all the time and money that you needed? What would you do if you had no fears of failure? What would you do if you could do what you really wanted to do? What would you do if you felt that you were free to choose? Because everybody feels trapped by circumstances to a certain degree. Everybody feels trapped by money circumstances, relationship circumstances, age, health, education, da, 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 da. It's okay. We all feel that we are constrained. Now you've got $1 million and it's all yours. You have no constraints. It's like the woman who comes home from work and says, honey, I won the lottery. I won $1 million. Pack your bags. And he says, great, where are we going? The ocean? The mountains? And she said, I don't care where you're going. Just pack your bags. So the question is, if you had $1 million cash, what would you do differently? Now, all this question does is it helps you to think clearly about what you really want, what your deep down desires and dreams are. And I can promise you this, if the first thing you wrote is that you would quit your current job, it means that you're in the wrong job. It means that you're in grave danger of wasting your life and that you must begin thinking immediately of what you would do to begin changing. You must organize your life so that when you ask this question again in 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, there's nothing in your life you would change. You would say, well, I start my own business. Good, start a business. There's 1,000 businesses you can start for less than $50. Well, I want to start a big business. Well, don't start a big business. You just lose big. Start a little business, lose little. Okay? Simple as that. Well, I would take a course. Good, take the course. Well, I would take more time to do this, write a book, sing a song, take a trip. Good, make your plans right now. Get on with it. In other words, don't wait till you have $1 million. Start planning now. Now, you can't do everything as quickly as you could if you had $1 million, but almost everything you wrote down you can do. Here's the most remarkable experience, most remarkable discovery, is that there is a connection between the brain and the hand. And what we have found is that you cannot write down something that you want clearly without having simultaneously the ability to accomplish it. You may not even know where you have this ability or how you can get the resources, but the fact that you can write it down means in almost every case that it's possible for you. The fact of being able to write it down is proof that you can do it. So whatever you wrote down in terms of your three major goals in life or what you would do if you won $1 million is attainable for you. It may not be attainable tomorrow, but you may be surprised. You know, you say, well, I'd quit this job in an instant. Well, there's a thought. How long does it take to do that? I was talking to someone recently, and she'd asked me, she said, you know, my husband really hates his job, and he's afraid to leave it for fear that he won't get another one. I said, how can he get another one if he stays in it? He is psychologically compromised. If he hates his job, it means it has no future. Walk away from it. And she told him, honey, walk away from the job. And he walked in, and he said, whatever happens, he said, I'll back you 100%. He said, fine. He went and he walked away from the job. Within a week, he had 3 job offers, vastly better than what he'd had. And people had said, geez, as soon as we knew you were available, wham, we were interested in having you work for us. But we thought you were trapped or stuck there or committed there indefinitely. She said he'd never had more opportunities and made more money. And even today, they're financially independent. He said if he'd stayed at that job, it would have ruined their lives. So if you don't like what you're doing, walk away from it. And remember, if you're very clear about who you are and what you want, you'll create a force field of attraction and you'll attract into your life opportunities, possibilities, people, ideas you cannot now imagine. I promise you it will work that way. Has anybody had this experience, by the way? Does it work? Yes. Works like a darn. Of course it does. You just have to have faith that it will work. Okay, number 9 is, what would you do, how would you spend your time if you learned today that you only had 6 months to live? You're going to enjoy absolutely incredible health. Your doctor has called you in and told you this. You're going to enjoy fantastic health for the next 6 months, and on the 181st day, you're going to drop stone dead. If that were to happen, how would you spend your last 6 months? What would you do? You have 1 minute, right quickly. Right quickly. 45 seconds. How would you spend, what would you do? You can write more than 5 things, but you must write a minimum of 5. Okay, please stop. Now this, as you can tell, is a values question. This is a values question. This takes us right back to the first question, and it asks you, what is really important to you in life? Because when you only have 6 months left to live, I can promise you this, nobody would say, well, I want to get back to the office and return a few phone calls. The fact is, if you only have 6 months to live, all you will think about is the most important things that you could possibly do in 6 months. Let me give you a couple of guesses. if you're a man or a woman, both men and women, first thing on your list is you would spend almost all of that time with the people who are most important to you in life. Good question for men. Men are the ones who are the most guilty of default in this area. Is do you have to be under a sentence of death to spend more time with your family? Second question, most men would say, well, I put all my affairs in order so that everything was correctly organized so that there would be no confusion upon my departure. Another thing you might write is, well, I probably want to write down some of the most important things I've learned so that my family and children would have them as my thoughts. Another thing you might want to do is you might want to resolve old conflicts and difficulties that you've had with other people in your life that are still festering and lingering out there. And you may want to take a trip. You may want to go and do something. You may want to run your credit cards up to the maximum as well. I worked with a gentleman named Carsey many years ago. Carsey was the All Japan karate champion, world karate champion in the All Japan tournament. Not very tall, but fast as quicksilver and a little bit pudgy, but brilliant karate man. Carsey, and this is back in the 60s, Carsey had been a kamikaze pilot in World War II. He fought for the Japanese and flew kamikaze. Well, he did not fly kamikaze. As they say, you know, you've heard of Chicken Yamamoto. He flew 26 kamikaze missions, but his heart was never in his work. he wasn't really committed to the job. Anyway, the point is that if you were kamikaze, you were trained to fly your plane into an enemy plane or ship. And you only had one run. You didn't come back. This was a great honor to be able to die for the emperor and for Japan. The kamikaze had beautiful white silk scarves, which made them the elite in Japan during the latter part of the war. And everywhere they went, they had everything they wanted. And I don't need to go into details, but they had everything they wanted because they were the elite. And every day in the afternoon, they would go, and the list of the flyers who would fly the next day would be put on a board. And if your name was not on the board, you had another night to live. If your name was on the board, you had another night to live. And so every day, every afternoon at 4 o'clock, they'd go and check the board and see if their name was there, if this would be their last night on earth. And so every day you had to live your life as though this was going to be your last day, because you never knew if your name would come up. As it happened, the war ended before his name came up. And he found out many years later that when they sorted the names, they picked and they sorted out the young men who would be necessary for the rebuilding of Japan. The ones who had some education, the ones who were still young, the ones who had gotten married and did not have families, or the ones who weren't married at all. And they sorted out the older ones or the ones. It was a very difficult way of doing it, but that's how they sorted them out. Carsey said, you must live your whole life, he said, as though you would live 100 years and die tomorrow. He said, if you can hold those two thoughts simultaneously, he said, this is the essence of Zen, is to live your life with those two thoughts. I'm going to live 50, 60, 70 more years, but I may die tomorrow. Hold those two simultaneously rather than going to one extreme or the other. So what would you do if you only had 6 months to live? That'll tell you what you really care about. And whatever it is, incorporate it into every part of your daily life. Now, number 10, what have you always wanted to do but been afraid to attempt? What have you always wanted to do but been afraid to attempt? Start a business, sing a song, run for office, get into a new business or a new career, go back to university? What have you always wanted to do but been afraid to attempt? First thing that comes to mind. Ten more seconds. Please stop. The fact that you've wanted to do it but have been afraid to attempt it may be an indication that that's what you were meant to do on this earth. Emmett Fox, who died in 1941, wrote a little essay called Your Heart's Desire. And he made this point, and it's affected the lives of many people. It just simply said that every person here has a heart's desire, that every person here is put on earth to do something special with their lives, and it is their heart's desire. And every person way down deep in the silence of their own room knows what it is. It calls to them like distant music. It's your heart's desire. And it's this one thing that if you could just do that, that's why you're here. And your job in life is to find your heart's desire. And sometimes it's the thing that you're afraid to attempt is the thing that you were most uniquely designed in all the world to do. That one thing. And we have found men and women throughout history who at a certain age finally decided to just do it. Just do it. And they found that that was where all their joy and success and satisfaction came from, your heart's desire. So when you ask, what have I always wanted to do but been afraid to attempt, it could be that that's it. It could be that that's it. Nobody said it would be easy. Nobody said it would be easy. Remember the famous story? Is it Josef Horowitz? Is that the violinist? Vladimir Horowitz. Great, great violinist. And someone came up to him at a party and said, I'd give my life to play the way you do. And he said, I did. And he said, Madam, no, you wouldn't. You would not pay the countless decades and thousands of hours of work to play the way I do. You wouldn't do it. You say it, but you wouldn't do it. You see, no one said to Horowitz when he was a young man that being a violin virtuoso will be easy. But he knew that's what he wanted to be. There was never a question in his mind. In his entire life, he was totally focused. That's all he ever wanted to do was play the violin beautifully. And so what is it that you've always wanted to do but been afraid to attempt? We're usually a little bit reluctant to tell people what we've wanted to do and been afraid to attempt. Okay, number 11. What part of your work, what sort of work or activity gives you your greatest feeling of importance? Or another way, what gives you your greatest feeling of self-esteem, self-respect, personal pride? What sort of things do you do that you enjoy more than anything else in your work? What are the high points? What Abraham Maslow called the peak experiences. Look back over your life. What have been your peak experiences in life, and what did they have in common? Almost invariably, they had to do with affecting the lives of someone else. Maybe they weren't even paid at all. They may have been working totally voluntarily at something that really gave you a lot of joy and satisfaction. Ten more seconds. What gives you your greatest feeling of importance? What have been your peak experiences? What parts of your life and work do you enjoy the most? Okay, please stop. I got a wonderful letter recently from a woman in Phoenix. And the woman had listened to one of my tapes, got one of my books, at a time in her life when she was at her wit's end. She said she was 52 years old. Her children had grown up and moved away to other parts of the country. Her husband divorced her and moved in with a younger woman, and she was fired from her job. And she was unemployed, broke, she was overweight, unhealthy, alone, and at a real low point. And then she discovered what we're talking about, goals. And then she came across this question about peak experiences, happiness, joy, excitement. What did she enjoy doing? What did she love doing? What has she always wanted to do? And you know what her answer was at the age of 52, after working for a bank for most of her life? Her answer was quilting. Quilting? Quilting. All her life, from the time she was a young woman, she had learned quilting. She had always quilted for herself. She'd quilted with others. Her mother had taught her quilting. Her grandmother had taught her quilting. And it had always been a sort of a stress relief for her. She'd made quilts for herself. She'd studied quilting. She was quite good at quilting. She always enjoyed quilting. And yet she said, she wrote to me in this letter, very interesting. She said, but of course, it's impossible to make any money at quilting. It's a pastime. It's nonsense. But she said, but how would Brian react to that? He would say, no, think of how you could do it, not whether or not it's possible. So I said, well, how could I get into quilting? So then she saw an ad, Law of Attraction, for a quilting class given at a local college or YMCA. So she decided she would go and take a class. And she took the class, and as she got into the class, she realized by the first class that she really knew more than anybody in the class, and by the second class, she knew more than the instructor because she had spent more years at it than the instructor. And the second class, the instructor quit. I mean, not because of anything. They had a problem in their home or something like that, got sick, but she quit. And they said, what are we going to do with the class? Disband it? And someone said, well, she could give the class. She really knows a lot about it. So they said, would you continue the class? And she wrote to me in this letter. She said, Law of Attraction, this is the sort of thing that happens. So she agreed to give the class. And she spent a lot of time preparing for these classes, even though it only paid a few dollars per class, $20 or $25. So she gave the class. People loved it. The word went out, and other people asked her to give other classes. Pretty soon, she's giving classes all over town, and they're paying her more. Pretty soon, she's acting as an advisor to stores that sell quilting materials. And one of the problems that everybody seemed to have was cutting up the pieces. And there had never been a breakthrough in quilting in history. All pieces were cut up by scissors. And she said, there must be a way to do it faster and easier. And she went home and she asked the fellow next door. She said, you know, I've been working on this problem. He said, he's a handyman. He said, well, if you've got an idea of how to do it, I might help you make the machine. So they went into the garage and said they worked till 3 o'clock in the morning. They came up with a little machine, almost like a paper slicer. And it worked. And it was the first breakthrough in quilting in history. And she took down the prototype to a local quilting store and they said, we'll buy all you've got. Everybody who quilts will want one of these. I mean, it's the difference between, you know, digging with a shovel and digging with a teaspoon. So she said, well, how much are they? She said, I don't know. She worked out, I think she sold them for $39. It cost her about $7 or $8 in labor and materials to make them. And every quilting store in town started to buy them. They were written up in every quilting magazine. She started to sell hundreds and thousands. She started her own plant. She became an authority. She wrote books on quilting. She lectures at quilting. She's one of the most foremost. She said she's never made more money in her entire life. She is successful. She's respected. She's doing what she loves every minute of every day. It's been less than 2 years since her life was in the ditch. But following her heart's desire, doing what she really wanted to do, doing what she'd always wanted to do but been afraid to attempt, and doing what she really felt wonderful about doing, suddenly her whole life is transformed. And every time she felt like quitting, she said, wait a minute, let's find a way to make it work. Let's find a way to make it work. Absolutely phenomenal story. Well, it might work for you too. Number 12. This is one of the greatest of all questions. I'm going to write it in red because it's so important. What one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail? What one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail? If you were absolutely guaranteed of success in any one thing in life, long term or short term, big or small, what one great thing would you dare to dream? I'm going to give you a magic pill. You take this pill, and whatever goal you write down after that, you can have guaranteed. What would it be? You have 60 seconds. Write down your biggest dream, your biggest goal in life. If you want easy questions, go somewhere else. Imagine no limitations. You could be, do, have anything in the world. What one goal would it be? Left. Okay, please stop. Remember the rule, if you can write it down, you can probably accomplish it. You don't need guarantees. Who is your guarantee on the achievement of your goals? You are. You're your guarantee. You are your warranty. You are the assurance that the goal is attainable. Nobody else is. Nobody else can be. Nobody else will be. Nobody else even cares. You are your greatest assurance. But if you can want it enough and you can write it down so it's absolutely crystal clear on paper, then it's probably attainable. Maybe not in a week, maybe not in a month, maybe not in a year, but the fact that you could write it down means you can probably achieve it. Now, if that doesn't make your stomach flutter a little bit, and if that's not a bit of a scary, exciting thought, then you probably need some counseling. Because this is the great question. Ask your spouse, ask your kids, ask your friends, ask your employees. If you can see that what you're doing is moving you toward accomplishing the one thing that you would love to accomplish, if you had no limits at all, it's probably your heart's desire. That's probably what you were meant to do. Now, the last point is a goal-setting exercise. And this goal-setting exercise is terribly important. I'm going to give you a minute or two to complete this, but it's the most important of all, and I will tell you afterwards why. You're going to write down 10 things that you want to accomplish in the next 12 months. These are one-year goals, and you are going to write them down in the present tense. So this list of goals, which we call a goal-setting exercise, with today's date, and you're going to write down 10 things that you want to accomplish in the next 12 months, and you're going to write them in the present tense, as though they already existed. I earn, I weigh, I drive, I live in. I had a gentleman tell me recently he did this exercise after this class, and he wrote down, I have my own business and I live in a 3,000 square foot custom made home. He said 11 and a half months later, he had his own business and he was doing so well, he bought a 3,000 square foot custom-made home. He said it was absolutely astonishing. So these are one-year goals. Now, begin immediately and write down 10 goals. 10 things you want to accomplish in the next 12 months. Write quickly. We have a billionaire waiting out in the lobby with a checkbook. He's going to write you a check to cover all your goals, as long as you have 10. If you have less than 10, you get nothing. If your goals are vague or fuzzy or indeterminate, you get nothing. If your goals are not written in the present tense, you get nothing. But if you write down 10 clear, specific, present tense goals, imagine someone will write you a check for the whole amount. Write quickly. There's no right or wrong here, by the way. You can change them later. So just write right from the beginning. You know, perfect health, exercise vigorously three times a week, $100,000 in the bank, debt-free, new car, nice home, take a trip to Europe, do something for your family. Just write them down. New wardrobe, new stereo set, new furniture, doesn't matter. Just write down your 12-month goals. New job, better job, increase your income, move into the top 10%. Just quick, 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 quick. Don't take time. Not easy, is it? You thought you knew, didn't you? First two or three were easy. All right, 15 seconds. All right, please stop. This is one of the most important exercises I've ever learned. I teach it everywhere. Anybody who's been to my larger seminars will find that if I only have a short period of time, I get this across, because I know that this is like a depth charge. Boom! It'll change your life. And the reason it works is this. If all you did was write down your 10 goals and then take this workbook and put it away and come back a year later, find the workbook, open it up, turn it to that point, and look at those 10 goals, you'll just about fall off your chair, because you'll find that 8 of your 10 goals will have been accomplished in the most remarkable ways. A fellow in my seminar recently came up to me and said, you know, I was at a seminar of yours about 6 months ago, he said, and I wrote down the 10 goals, and then I lost them. He said, about 2 weeks ago, I moved. Actually, I wrote down 18 goals. What the heck? Go for it. What if it works, right? So I wrote down 18 goals, and you said 80% of the goals would be accomplished within 1 year? Well, I lost the list, but when I moved and we unpacked just a week and a half ago, he said, I found the list. He said, I read it, and I started looking at it. I had to sit down, he said, because 11 of the 18 goals had already been accomplished in 5.5 months. And they were big goals. I mean, some of them were unrealistic goals. I mean, some of them were off the clock. He said, but 11 of 18 goals had been accomplished. Every time I give this exercise and I meet people later, they say, it's amazing. Because it doesn't take 12 months before they start happening. Within a day, a week, those goals start to materialize. They start to go click, 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 and fall off. I had one gentleman from Houston who got this exercise from me, and he flew back to Houston on Saturday after learning this exercise on Saturday morning at the wrap-up to a conference. He flew back, and on the plane, he said, well, I've heard about goal setting all my life, but, I thought I'd give it a shot. So I wrote down 10 things I wanted to accomplish. He said, then I took out the list and reviewed it on Sunday night. He said, I found I'd already accomplished 5 of the 10. So I quickly wrote 5 more. He called me the next Thursday in my office, and he said, I've got to talk to Brian Tracy. I spoke to him. He said, you won't believe it, but I've accomplished 5 more of the new list of 10. He said, I've accomplished more in the last week with written goals than I expected to accomplish in an entire year. He said, and those are not small goals. They're personal relationship goals and business goals and partnership goals and investment goals. And I mean, it would be incredible. So I can promise you this. The very fact that you could write down the 10 goals will virtually assure that 8 out of those 10 will be accomplished. Now, there are ways that you can dramatically accelerate that process, but the fact that you could do it will change your life. It'll make next year the best year of your life. However, many people here could not or would not write down the 10 goals. And that's a very interesting thing. There's nothing wrong with that, because very often when we look at a blank sheet of paper like that, we go blank. We think we have goals, and we go blank. Suddenly it becomes very, very difficult. But goal setting is a skill. Has anybody ever tried to get back in shape after being out of shape for a while? And you notice how stiff you are and how sore you are and how tired you get and how long it takes you and so on. But if you keep working out, it gets easier and easier to do more and more, doesn't it? Goal setting is something you learn to do over and over again. I do this exercise every day. Every day, every day, I write down my top 10 goals. Every day, every day. And the difference and the speed at which you attain them is phenomenal. Now here's the final question. And the final question here is, what is your major definite purpose? From everything that you've looked at, if you don't know for sure, take a stab at it. Just say, what is my major definite purpose? What one goal, if I accomplished it, would have the greatest positive impact on my life? Of all the goals I've written down here, which one, if you accomplished it, today, tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, 3 years, would have the greatest positive impact on your life? Is it to become a self-made millionaire? Good. That's a good major definite purpose. Write it down. Is it to dramatically improve your health? Write it down. Is it to build a business to a certain size with a certain cash flow per month? Write it down. What one goal would have the greatest positive impact on your life? Write it down in the present tense as though it already existed. Write it down in the present tense in the now. Okay, please stop. Remember I said that by coming to this seminar, you put yourself into the top 10%. The top 10% of people come to these seminars, and especially the tremendous amount of time, expense, sacrifice that you've made to come here makes you a cut above, puts you in the top 10%, puts you in an upper class, an upper strata of people, not because of your wishes or hopes or intentions, but because of your behaviors. You've made a decision, some of you have come long distances, and you've done it. Now, writing down your goals, as you have just done, puts you in the top 3%. You've now moved and taken a jump even within the top 10% to the top 3%. Because the exercise that you've just done is done by less than 3% of living Americans in their entire lives. And I can promise that the fact of writing these goals down is the same as stepping up to your computer and typing them in onto the screen and then pushing the button and transferring them to the hard drive. They've now moved by writing from your conscious mind into your subconscious mind. They will now take on a power of their own. They will now start to bring changes into your life, and they will activate the law of attraction and begin to attract into your life people and circumstances that will begin to make them a reality. You'll begin to have ideas that will enable you to move faster toward the achievement of the goals. You'll have insights and opportunities. You'll read things and hear things. You'll find that your whole world is like a bunch of lights will start to flash all around you, all of which will help you to move towards your goals and start your goal moving toward you. Your critical job is to be crystal clear about what you wrote down. And the more you think about your goals and review them, the more you visualize them and imagine them, the more you reread them and affirm them, the more rapidly you move toward them and the more rapidly they move toward you. This is the great secret of success. This has always been the great secret of success. What you dwell upon grows. What you think about comes into your reality. What you visualize and imagine, you begin to believe, and you begin to activate all the laws of the cosmos in your behalf. And what you have done right now is like shifting gears or stepping on the accelerator or pushing the detonator, and kaboom, your life will be different. That is my promise to you, and I've made this promise before, and it's never been contradicted. The only thing people tell me is that it works far faster than a year. You will see changes within a week. Some of you will see changes before the day is over. just by the very act of clarifying in your own mind who you are, what you stand for, where you're going, and what you want to accomplish.
This is the end of this disc. The program continues on the next CD.